This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth, and also, obviously, important to all people. Right now, this information is extremely important and vital to the people of Palestine, and the people of Lebanon, and the people of Iran, who may even face a devastating war because they don't go along with Zionist aspirations in the Mideast. It's okay for Israel to have nuclear power, chemical, biological weapons. It's okay for Israel to violate United Nations resolutions, but God forbid any other nation to do so. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not in our interest to be in Iraq. It's not in our interest to support the criminal behaviors of Israel and Lebanon. It's not in our interest to tell another country that they can't pursue peaceful nuclear energy and development. We are creating a situation of war and conflict by our incredible, insane support for Israel's crimes. That's the roots of the problem. And as long as the United States continues to act as Israel's lackey, as Israel's servant, as Israel's enforcer, you might say, as Israel's hitman, we will continue to endure terrorism and problems on our shores. How many more 9/11s must America face because of Israel's control of our foreign policy, because of the way that Israel's able to get the government of the United States to support their criminal actions, which end up hurting every American? How many more thousands of American men must be maimed or disfigured or crippled in Iraq or elsewhere on behalf of the state of Israel in a war that does not make America more secure, but literally damages terribly and murders many Americans in a war that costs us countless billions of dollars when we have so many struggling middle-class people at home who can barely afford to pay their taxes, can't afford their education, their children, can't afford even decent medical insurance, and we're sending our money overseas to Israel in a war not for America, in a war that's only increasing terrorism, increasing hatred against our country. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm opposed to the Iraq war for two reasons. One, from the standpoint of patriotism. I'm a patriotic American. I don't want Americans to die for a foreign interest. American interests, there may be times, yes, when Americans will have to die and suffer for our freedoms. And we are losing our freedoms. But you know, our danger to this country is not from overseas. It's going on inside of our country, what the government's doing to take away our rights and liberties and freedoms, and the fact that our government is not defending the most critical aspect of America, and that is our borders. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's continue on with the audio section of my book, Jewish Supremacism, the section called Israel, a Supremacist State. We have three chapters on Israel in this book. This is the end of the first chapter on Israel, a very vital chapter. You must understand the origins of Israel. And as I've pointed out, with incredible Jewish documentation, the Israelis and the Zionists had a tremendous alliance, and Israel truly is an expression of the Zionist fanaticism and extremism and supremacy that I've been exposing in my entire book, Jewish Supremacism. So here we go. This is the chapter, Israel, a Supremacist State, the final part. Zionist fanaticism had little regard for human lives, including that of Jews. When it came to the establishment of Israel, Israel's first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, made the following statement when German Jewry was threatened by Hitler. Quote, and this is an amazing statement, quote, "If I knew that it would be possible to save all the children in Germany by bringing them over to England, and only half of them by transporting them to Eretz Yisrael, then I would opt for the second alternative. For we must weigh not only the life of these little children, but also the history of the people of Israel." Unquote. If Israel's first prime minister If his regard for Jewish life was such that he would rather see half of the Jewish children of Germany die than be transported to England rather than Israel, how much value could one expect him to place on the life of a Palestinian child? How would the world react to a Nazi who would say that he would rather see half the Jewish children die rather than simply go to another country? Another classic example of his low regard for human life, even Jewish life, can be seen in the 1940 terrorist act by Ben-Gurion and the founders of the Zionist state. The Haganah, led by Ben-Gurion, blew up a ship of Jewish refugees from Hitler. The British had been taking them to the Mauritius rather than allowing them to disembark in Haifa, Israel. To arouse indignation against the British, the Zionists blew up the ship on Christmas Day, 1940, causing the death of 252 Jews, as well as the ship's English crewmen. If Nazis had blown up a ship of Jewish refugees in the waters of Israel, the Mossad would have hunted the perpetrators to the ends of the earth if need be, so they could be brought before Israeli war crimes courts. There would be a well-publicized annual remembrance of the terrible act of Nazi terrorism. Instead, Israel chose the murderer, in this case, the terrorist murderer of Jewish lives, as its first prime minister. Zionism and Nazism are torn from similar cloth, their banners stained with blood. Zionists, though, are infinitely better at public relations. The next section, Israel, a racist state. On November 10, 1975, a plenary session of the United Nations declared that Zionism is a form of racism. Howls of protest went up across America and throughout the world from the, once again, poor, persecuted Jews. They were furious that such a charge could have been made against the, quote, only true democracy in the Mideast, unquote. But what exactly is Zionism if it is not racism? Even David Ben-Gurion, in discussing the Hitlerism of Menachem Begin, wrote, quote, "He can be accused of racism, but then one will have to put on trial the entire Zionist movement, which is founded on the principle of a purely Jewish entity in Palestine." Unquote. The International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, adopted by the United Nations General Assembly in 1965, has now been ratified by most member states. Article 1 of this convention defines the term racial discrimination as, and I quote, "any distinction, exclusion, restriction, or preference based on race, color, descent, or national or ethnic origin, which has the purpose or effect of nullifying or impairing the recognition, enjoyment, or exercise on an equal footing of human rights and fundamental freedoms in the political, economic, social, cultural, or any other field of public life." Unquote. Israel was and is a nation set up exclusively for Jews. By the Israeli law of return, a Jew is defined not by his religious beliefs, but by his Jewish ancestry, proven by the heritage of his parents. Although it is possible for Gentiles to convert to Judaism, the obstacles are so great that the converted make up only a tiny percentage of the Jewish population. As I write these lines, Jewish Orthodoxy, the state-sanctioned religion of Israel, is in a major controversy with American Reform and conservative factions because the Orthodox in Israel will not even recognize conversions from these two branches of Judaism. A Palestinian who was born within the boundaries of what is now Israel and whose family lived there for thousands of years before being forced out by the Israeli army cannot return to his homeland and become a citizen of Israel. In contrast, an atheist Jew born in New York City and who speaks no Hebrew can immigrate to Israel and be granted instant citizenship. In addition, the Israeli government offers him help for housing, living expenses, education, and besides many other numerous benefits. In 1948, nearly 94% of the land of Israel was owned by Palestinians. Since then, Palestinian-owned land has been systematically confiscated by the Israeli government. Most of the Palestinian land went into what Israel calls, quote, the National Jewish Fund, and was declared by law to be, quote, land of Israel, unquote. It has become Jewish land, and by law it can never be sold to a non-Jew, rented to a non-Jew, or worked by a non-Jew. Much of the land has been given at no cost to Jewish settlers. The Zionist army has forced the Palestinians from more than 350 cities and villages in Israel and the occupied territories and then bulldozed their homes. Even ancient Palestinian cemeteries are often plowed under. Two other laws concern the Karin Kemiet National Jewish Fund Law, passed on 23 November 1953, and the Karin Hesod Reconstruction Fund Law, passed on 10 January 1956. The president of the Israeli Human Rights League, Dr. Israel Shahak, a professor at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, in his book, The Racism of the State of Israel, tells us that there are in Israel whole towns, Carmel, Nazareth, Elath, Hatzor, Arad, Mitzepin, Raman, and others, where non-Jews are forbidden by law to live. The Palestinians who remained in Israel, although ostensibly citizens, suffer intense discrimination. They are given citizenship identification cards that have no Israeli nationality designation. Nationality is listed only as Arab or Jewish, lending itself to the many discriminatory policies in the Jewish state. In Israel, there are whole cities and settlements in which it is illegal for Palestinians to live. There are segregated housing areas and complexes, schools, recreational facilities where Palestinians are not allowed. This segregation is not de facto. It is official government policy. Palestinians are not permitted to serve in the military, and despite the fact that Palestinians comprise between 15 and 20% of the Israeli population, there has never been one Palestinian in the Israeli cabinet. Israeli law does not recognize the legality of marriage between Jews and Palestinians, as marriages and other aspects of civil laws are decided by religious courts, which do not recognize such marriages. Whenever I see Jews in the American media glorifying and encouraging intermarriage between blacks and whites, I think about their hypocrisy in supporting a nation that will not, by law, recognize a marriage between a Jew and a non-Jew. Chaim Cohen, the former judge of the Supreme Court of Israel, noted, quote, "The bitter irony of fate, which has led to the same biological and racist laws propagated by the Nazis and which inspired the infamous Nuremberg laws, to serve as a basis for the definition of Judaism within the state of Israel." Unquote. It is quite interesting when a respected member of the Israeli Supreme Court says almost exactly the same thing about Jewish supremacism as did the much Jewish maligned Julius Streicher said at the Nuremberg trials. It is truly a world turned upside down when the same American and world press that never tires of conjuring up images of the crimes and evils of Nazism, but in turn gives a Jewish supremacist, Nazi-like nation, international deference and even adulation. As the primary founder of Israel, Ben-Gurion, admitted, "Zionism was founded on racist principles. If anyone other than a Zionist leader dares say the same thing as the Israeli founder, the world press would viciously condemn him. If by their power in the media and in the governments of the Western world, Jewish supremacists can be so effective in hiding their extreme supremacism, disguising their terrorism must seem like child's play." Having already learned a lot about terrorism and bloodthirstiness of the Jewish Bolsheviks in the early days of communism, I now decided to delve more thoroughly into an investigation of Zionist terrorism in the Mideast. A Palestinian I met in college related to me one of the most descriptive remarks that I've ever heard concerning the Palestinian conflict. He told me that, quote, "The Jew always cries in pain as he strikes you." Well, that's the end of the ninth chapter, Israel, a supremacist state. And in the next chapter, we're going to be dealing with the terrorism of Israel. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for being with me. I hope that you'll take the time and effort to spread this audiobook all over the world to your friends, family, relatives, strangers. You have a tremendous device in front of you, the internet, your computer. Use it. You can reach so many people every day. And we must reach out and tell this truth to the world, a truth that's been mightily suppressed. Again, they have the best public relations in the world. And this is certainly not respective of all Jews. But these radical, fundamentalist, extreme Jewish supremacists have tremendous power, not only in Israel, but over our own media in America and in many other countries around the world. And they're leading us to disaster. They're leading America to disaster in the Iraq war, a war for Israel rather than America. They have led America to disaster in supporting the Israeli criminal actions and murder in Lebanon, which is certainly going to result in more terrorism and hatred and disadvantage to the American people in the future. They're dominating our press. They've committed terrorism against us. We've got to begin to stand up and tell the truth. I appreciate all of you. Please remember that my work, my writing, my research, my speaking, and I speak all over the world and spread this information all over the world, it is only made possible by your contributions and your support. I don't have any big backers like these Jewish organizations. I depend and rely on middle-class people and others to give those small donations that make possible this work. If some of you out there who have the means to make a sizable donation, a large donation, please do so. It's your future at hand, and it's the future of your children, and it's truly in the interest of justice. We need your support very much. Well, I look forward to being with you tomorrow, and we'll take up the next chapter. Thanks so much. Until then, God bless and take care.